Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. The COVID-19 pandemic has deeply shaken many of our basic systems in just a few weeks. Albuquerque schools are closed. Businesses deemed non-essential have been shuttered. Some prisoners are being released from the county jail, and large public gatherings are forbidden. The need to keep as many people at home as possible offers an unprecedented set of challenges. How are people in institutions adapting to ensure people get the necessities? What type of things may we learn to live without? What big changes are you imagining? We want to hear from you this morning. Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in the live show, 505-277-5866. New Mexico is now up to 136 confirmed cases of coronavirus, and new directives are coming from the state and local agencies each day. This morning, we'll hear from a range of folks about how they're adapting, including a City of Albuquerque solid waste department. Later in the hour, we'll hear about the Metropolitan Detention Center's facility's decision this week to release medically vulnerable inmates and a criminal justice advocate who will tell us what the conditions are like for the rest of New Mexico's incarcerated population. I also believe that levity and creativity are important throughout these life or death type of conversations. So I've invited a comedian friend to help us think through this strange new world we're facing. But first up, let's talk about the arts. I want to welcome on the phone this morning Laura Segura. She is a member of the Keshet Dance Company here in Albuquerque. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? How are you and your family and friends doing?
We're doing well. We're a little stir crazy at this point, but we're doing our best to stay busy.
Yes, as a lot of us are. My cat at home is very much stir crazy. Sometimes I let him out, sometimes I don't. But he was up very early with me this morning, and he wanted to bolt out of the house, so I let him do it. So let me ask you, what has the two weeks of COVID been like for you?
Well, we're in the same boat as a lot of other performing arts nonprofits out in the country today. The majority of what we do is in-person live programming, whether that be teaching classes or giving performances. So we are doing our best to be creative. We're making changes and we're adapting by going online. So we're doing our very best to stick to our mission, which is to inspire and unite the community through the possibilities that are created through dance and the arts. And so we're getting creative ourselves and looking at our creative space as an online space now.
Okay. Are you offering like streaming performances for people?
Yes. So we do have that opportunity. At the moment, what we're doing is our faculty is creating a series of online community classes. So anyone can go to the Keshet Dance YouTube page, and we have a playlist of pre-recorded classes that we'll be adding to over time so that there's a little something there for everyone. They can download those classes. They can do them on their own time, in their own space.
Wow. I like that. So after this is kind of after everything ceases, we're going to have a lot of very skilled dancers on our hands. I like that a lot. Now, tell me, why is it important that people keep doing the things that they love, dancing and performing in the midst of this public health nightmare? Why is it important for us to keep our creative juices flowing?
That's an excellent question. And I think it has everything to do with our emotions and our energy are very much connected to how our bodies move. So if folks can find time to come together, to move together, to find some exercise and an opportunity to be creative, then in general, I think that's just going to help all of us find a better mood, which is going to make us healthier, and connect to our community. It's very difficult to be isolated, especially physically, for those that are used to being out and used to being around people all the time. And so finding release and finding a way to be creative together, even though we're physically distanced, is a wonderful way to find that sense of community that some of us are missing right now.
Now, speaking about that sense of community, dance, it's really often a collaborative and very, very social art. How are you taking this opportunity to connect with people in the different ways, but also in your solo practice? What are you doing to deepen it?
Good question. As far as Keshet goes, we have an online dance party that we're doing every Thursday at 4:30.
Okay.
We're also using things like Google Drive to share documents that we can create collaborative choreography from a distance. We're using iMovie and technologies like that so that we can film ourselves and then share those videos with each other and build off of the choreography that we're working on together. And we're doing a lot of Zoom meetings so that we can connect to each other and see each other's faces, hear each other's voices.
That's good. It would have been a good time to invest in Zoom maybe in December. Everybody's doing Zoom. My homeboys just hit me up yesterday. They're like, man, I haven't seen you. Let's go to Zoom. I'm like, all right, let's do it. Question for you. With all kinds of sports that are canceled, kids and adults, they need new ways to stay active, keep our bodies feeling good, like you just mentioned. What are easy ways for people to dance at home or outside? And what if they can't dance? What if they're rhythmically challenged?
I believe that everyone can dance.
Nice.
If you open your definition of what dance means, really, we're just dancing. So if folks want to get outside, to take a walk, to stretch their legs, choreographically, if we look at this from principles of choreography, just finding a way to reach up high, to explore low levels, to explore wide and narrow. These are all things that we look at when we're creating choreography, and that's something that folks can do from the privacy of their own homes as well. And the best part is you can create your own movement playlist. So this is a great opportunity to go through your iTunes, your Amazon Music, your playlists at home, and find things that really speak to you and resonate in your body, and then just play.
Yeah.
That would be my suggestion. Just play around and do what makes you feel good. Do what makes you smile.
That's very important. That's good advice. Let me ask you finally, what other New Mexico artistic or creative groups are you aware of that have taken their work online during this time?
Oh, there's a lot of folks. There's a lot of folks that are gig workers and contractors out here that have found themselves without performances that they thought they were going to have. There is Albuquerque Arts Hub is a group of artists that have gotten together, and they are working towards relief aid for independent artists. And they're also working together to share resources. So, for instance, for our online dance classes, we are finding ourselves in a position where we are in need of royalty-free music. So we've connected to other musicians here in Albuquerque and other online platforms that are providing royalty-free music so that we're able to do our classes online.
That's good. That's
so
good.
I think everybody's kind of banding together and working together to make sure that we can progress in these new online platforms.
That's wonderful. We'll see what emerges from that. We want to hear from you, listeners. Tell us how you're staying creative, or are you getting creative for the first time? Call 277-5866. Now, our lives have been flipped around. There's no doubt about that. No matter how you view things, it always helps to have a bit of levity, even in the most serious of situations. So when I thought of who can make me and all of our listeners smile, one name came to mind. Sarah Kennedy. Yes, the comedian Sarah Kennedy joins the show to give us some laughs and levity. Welcome, Sarah.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? How are you doing?
Oh, you know, honestly, doing pretty all right. I'm shelter in placing with my fiance, and we keep finding goofy ways to pass the time. So, and also, I will say, I think we struck the perfect spot between having not enough, but also not hoarding toilet paper. So we're good.
Okay, nice. Nice. Oh, I like that. So what have you been doing with your time?
Well, you know, it's crazy because I feel this pressure to like be really productive because I keep seeing all these things that say like, you know, Shakespeare wrote King Lear when he was in quarantine, but I'm also like, Shakespeare did not have 8 hours of Tiger King on Netflix to watch. So.
Yes.
When watching a lot of that.
I hear that that's pretty amazing. So, I need to get up on my Netflix game. Has this has this quarantining inconvenienced you from any projects that you were working on and trying to start up, like the one we were going to do 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Yeah, that one for sure. I was also supposed to be in a comedy festival in Phoenix this weekend. And then tonight, I was supposed to open for John Fugelsang as part of the Tricklock Revolutions International Theater Festival. And then that got postponed, too. And, I mean, it's crazy because I do little things every week, like host trivia and put on comedy shows. But I'm really way more worried about the local institutions that provide us all with outlets like Tricklock and Keshet. And, you know, I think we all need to just support them the most.
That's what we need to get out there and do it and do it. So tell me, what have you noticed about us, humanity, since this started?
Oh, well, it's interesting because, you know, I moved back here from New York. And I kind of feel like I've had a front row seat to the stuff that comes before what New Mexicans are going to get. Like, I've seen all my friends in New York kind of go through the first steps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty incredible to see, I don't know, people trying to, like, pretend like it wasn't serious, and then all of a sudden it sinks in and it's serious. And I think we're really lucky to have the right people on the local level making decisions ahead of the curve for us, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So, and then also in a really personal way, like, my dad works for Costco, and it's crazy to see these people just, like, step up and do essential work for us. And it really is essential. Like, my dad provides people with their ability to stay fed and to stay clean. And he just goes out every day like it's normal. And I think that that's pretty incredible.
Now, I haven't been to Costco because I don't want to risk my life trying to find toilet paper, but I have a question. I enjoy going to Costco. They're not offering free samples anymore, are they?
No, that was one of the first things to go. They were like,
man,
no more samples.
Dang.
I know.
This thing just keeps taking more and more from us. I don't know what to do. I really don't
They'll
know.
They'll come back.
Yeah,
they'll
hopefully,
come back.
Hopefully they will. Now, as a comedian, how does humor help you get through such a serious and often upsetting time?
Well, you know, I think that we just have so much more time on our hands now, or most people do. And so luckily, I think keeping a good sense of humor and keeping an eye out for ways to spend that time creatively and then providing that for other people, that just, I don't know. I think it's the only thing keeping me sane, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do it. You got to keep your head up.
Mm-hmm. We absolutely do. Have there been any little slightly hilarious moments you've experienced?
You know, yesterday we took a walk around the block for the first time in like a week.
Okay.
And it was, I feel like, I just kept being like, look at all the colors. Oh my gosh, it's gorgeous. You ever seen anything so beautiful? It just was like, I was like an old Hollywood starlet, just experiencing things.
Nice. Now, for full transparency, Sarah and I are basically, we're next door neighbors. And I didn't see any, there's been no one on the block, which is a little bit strange. It's quiet
it's
and
eerie.
Beautiful, but yeah, very eerie.
Yeah, I think, you know, people are doing what they're supposed to, which is nice.
Yeah.
Stay home.
Yeah, exactly. We'll leave it up to us to go out there. Now, are you used? You're used to performing in front of audience. How are you doing with withdrawals? Are you like getting on Zoom and just performing for people at random?
Oh no, I wish. I see a lot of my comedy peers do that, where they just get up and they kind of are like, "I'll pretend there's people here," but I don't know. I can't quite get my head around that yet. So I just am trying to find. I don't know. This is a great way to reach out and connect with people. And I'm trying to start small, like keep it with my family and my friends, move it bigger as I can come up with funny ideas and cool ways to make valuable stuff for them.
Yes, 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 yes. You're listening to Sarah Kennedy, comedian extraordinaire. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're going to take a quick break. This morning, we're talking about responses to coronavirus in New Mexico. What radical changes has your organization or field had to make to adapt to? How are you coping with all the fear and uncertainty? Our phone lines are open. Call them, call them, call them. 277-5866 or tweet the hashtag, #Let's Talk NM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 FM. I am Khalil A. Colonna, and we will be back in 1 minute. Just about 60 seconds for you all.
I'm Nash Jones. Morning Edition host here at KUNM. And you know, here at the station, we recognize that now's not the time for business as usual. That's why all week we've brought you the special call-in show you're listening to right now, and it's why we've changed up the spring fundraiser, which was scheduled for this week. We shut down the phone rooms and decided not to interrupt any of the programming outside regularly scheduled breaks like this one. Our work is an essential public service in this crisis, and we know it. We hope you know it too. With your contribution to the station today in any amount at KUNM.org, you can help us get that much closer to our overall goal, which we've gotten to 75% of so far, which is fantastic. We'd love to just quiet the fundraiser all the way down today, but we need your help to do that. And if you give this hour, in the 8 o'clock hour, an anonymous donor from Albuquerque will even give it a little boost with a $500 challenge grant activated if we hit 10 donors this hour. Will you be one of them? Like Ray Reeder and Joan Varney. Thanks, Ray and Joan. I hope you will join them in supporting the station. Thanks for your time, and thanks for your support. And with that, let's go back to Khalil in Studio A with Let's Talk New Mexico.
Thank you, Nash. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. We had Laura Segura from the Cachette Dance Company here, and we've got Sarah Kennedy on the line to add some levity and jokes for us. But first, coronavirus is definitely disrupting our lives in a multitude of ways, but one unexpected change has to do with the new normal. Recently passed by the city of Albuquerque, the only two-month-old plastic bag ban. Yesterday, the city of Albuquerque announced that it will temporarily, lift that ban for 30 days. To speak about that, I'd like to welcome my next guest, Matt Whelan, the city's solid waste department director. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
What's going on? How are you doing? How's your family doing?
We're doing good, you know, just going through this with everybody else. And we're, like you guys said earlier, we're just all going through this and doing it together.
Yeah, we're adjusting and adapting. We were just getting used to bringing our own bags from home because once they lifted the ban, I would go to the store a couple times. I'm like, oh, man, I didn't bring my bag. But then I got used to it, and now I have to wash my bag every time that I use it. Now, according to a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, COVID-19 stays on plastic for up to 72 hours after contact. That seems really, really long. Is it really better than paper or cloth?
So from that standpoint, I think that paper or cloth is probably one of the better things to use. And part of the reason why we have suspended the ordinance for the next 30 days is that there are problems getting paper bags. So we have businesses contact us and say we're having some issues receiving what we need. So what was to do was to just ease some of that burden on them, because the job that they're doing right now is very important as far as what we're going through. And we want to make them have as less obstacles as possible to continue to do their jobs and to keep them safe as well.
Okay. Now, this ban lifting only lasts 30 days. After that, assuming the coronavirus threat has lessened, will we be going back to how things were in February? Is there a plan to strengthen the ban later in the year?
Well, we've always had a plan for implementation of our clean and green ordinance, and that plan really started January 1. And really the first, we'd been doing a lot of education last year as far as what was coming in the new year with the new ordinance. And so the first 6 months of the ordinance, we were really working with businesses to transition over to paper bags or to continue to encourage residents to use reusable bags. And I'll tell you this, in the first 2 years, the response we got of people using reusable bags was great. The residents of Albuquerque really stepped up and bought into it. And so we did have a lot of momentum, and we don't feel that this will really deter that momentum. But coming out of this, we were always wanting to evolve the ordinance. That was always the plan from the beginning, you know, to start with one step and then you work towards it. So what we're going to do is after all this is said and done, we're going to continue to move the ordinance forward. And that'll include redefining some of the ordinance to limit even more plastic bags. I apologize, because our goal as we move forward, as always, is to continue to make Albuquerque more sustainable.
Yes. And the plastic ban was one way for the city that was trying to do something good for the earth, for the people, like you just said. Now we have a whole different set of mandates to avoid catastrophic outcomes in this pandemic. How are you thinking about the ways priorities are so quickly shifting right now? Is that something that you agree with?
I think that, you know, we just have to go with what we're being instructed to do by those who make the decisions, because they have the information that's needed. And I think we just continue to adjust as we're being told what to do. For instance, the plastic bag ordinance adjustment was just something that, after talking to grocers and many businesses, they had a couple concerns. So we said, well, we can address those concerns right away by lifting the ban for 30 days and then reevaluating it in 30 days. But if everything is back to normal after 30 days, then we just pick up right where we were as of a week ago, continuing to educate, continuing to work with businesses to get us to that point where we want to just be more sustainable, because that's where the goal and the intent of the ordinance was always to make things more sustainable. And really, the message we really wanted into the new year was, what's your New Year's reuse-olution? And that's why we were really pushing reusable bags, because we really want to get away from all that stuff where it's just for, even if it's multiple uses, but really put it back on us to work with the city to get to a more sustainable place.
I like that. I like that. Let me go to a listener question. We've got Doug on the line, who's got a question, I think, just for you. Welcome, Doug. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier to the person answering the phone, I'm 72 years old. I'm one of those in that higher risk group, along with many others. I have a problem trying to find sanitary wipes or sanitizer, hand sanitizers. Travel around to all these stores. It's all sold out. You can't find it. Go on Costco and other online. They're also out of stock of this stuff. Does anybody have any suggestions on how we might find these items so that we can protect ourselves and others by getting them and using them?
Do any of our guests have suggestions on that? Well, I know one thing. We have a website. You can find resources on the webpage for this show. If you go to KUNM.org, it's right at the top. And the state hotline, you can possibly call for resources. It's 855-600-3453. And also, Doug, we have a podcast called Your New Mexico Government. And on that podcast, on our homepage, we have a listing. Every episode, we talk to people who are providing resources for folks. Every episode, we list those resources there. It's all compiled on one page for you to go to and to see. What other items are you looking for?
You know, that's basically it. I haven't had too much trouble now finding bottled water. Not very much trouble finding paper towels, been able to do that. I have a supply of toilet paper, so that's not been an issue. It's basically really the hand wipes and the sanitizers, which is kind of important.
Very.
Because how are we going to protect ourselves if we can't? There's none of that available, and it's hard to find.
Well, if we got any listeners out there who are aware of resources that will help Doug and many others, please call us up, 277-5866. I want to circle back to Matthew. Matthew, tell me, what other changes in solid waste, in the solid waste department, are, what are they making at this time over the concern over COVID-19?
Well, one of the things, there's a lot of things we're doing internally to protect our drivers who have just been great through this whole situation. From day one, they've continued to just come in and be willing to work 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and just continue to do their job, as this has been going on. So we've taken some measures as far as social distancing. Our drivers are reporting straight to their trucks. We've closed down all common areas so that there's no interaction as far as face-to-face. We're getting them in their trucks. We're getting them, we've given them each kits that have hand sanitizer, gloves, paper towels, and Clorox bottles, everything they need to clean their trucks. So from that perspective, as far as day-to-day services, we're continuing business as usual, because it's very, very important for us to continue to pick up the refuse and recycling through the city. So from that standpoint, on the residential side, we're continuing everything we've always done. Now, we have scaled back certain services that we've deemed can be put off, as far as like cart replacements and those kind of things. We're doing that on a more scaled back basis, as opposed to just every day. We're looking at those case by case. But with the new restrictions, our commercial pickups are being reduced on a daily basis because we are working with local businesses that may not be open. We're adjusting their services so that they're not being picked up and we're not picking up empty cans and charging them for things. So we are working with local businesses for that kind of stuff. But for the most part, solid waste is continuing on, and we're doing everything we've always done with the exception of some minor services being scaled back. And we have a lot of our office staff telecommuting from home.
Okay. So it looks like you guys are doing a good job to protect the very essential workers. Sarah, let me ask you, have you experienced any shortages yet?
Not really, but that's mostly because I've been at home. So any shortages are just private and my own.
So. Okay. I totally understand that. I want to pivot and get to a listener question. She's been on the line for a while, waiting patiently. She wants to make some comments about emergency relief grants for artists. Suzanne, thank you for calling into the show, and thank you for waiting.
Sure. Thanks for putting me on.
Of course. What information do you have about emergency relief grants for artists?
So 516 Arts is the nonprofit arts organization that I direct, and we have an annual grant fund that's supported by the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, and we've been doing it for 5 years. This is our fifth year, and we were about to announce the opportunity for artists for project grants like we normally do, and when all this exploded, we realized that it was very important that artists needed basic funds to pay their bills and their childcare and their groceries. So the Warhol Foundation has been encouraging all their re-granting partners around the country to do this. So we're able to give out initially $60,000. It's going to be $61,000 grants to artists that live in an 80-mile radius of Albuquerque.
Wonderful.
So it's Albuquerque, Bernalillo County. It includes Santa Fe, Española, Socorro, and Grants.
Fantastic. Where can people go to get this information?
They can go to 516arts.org/fulcrumfund. And the deadline is April 15th, and then the decisions will be made very quickly, and the money will go out to people in very soon after.
All right. We're going to make sure that people get on that. Artists, if you're listening or if you know an artist, please pass on that information. Suzanne, thank you so much for calling into the show, and thank you for what you're doing for the creative community. Doug, we may have some help for you. I've got Brian on the line who's got some solutions for finding sanitizing wipes. Brian, welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico.
Hi. My name's Brian Crum. I'm a nurse. I went through the whole SARS thing back in 2003 when we were having to deal with the potential for the virus being left on surfaces. One thing you can do, I was in the same issue, not having an ability to find alcohol-based hand wipes. I bought baby wipes, and I just opened up the package, let the baby wipes dry out completely, and then I re-wet them with 70% isopropyl alcohol, just rubbing alcohol. Another option that you have, I mean, at least the alcohol, that's safe to, like, use on your skin. You probably don't want to use bleach on your skin, but if you're wiping down a surface, if you mix 10 parts water to 1 part bleach in a spray bottle, you can spray that on your surfaces, and that just let it sit for, like, 15 to 30 seconds. That should kill the virus and then wipe it off. You don't want to use full-strength bleach. Full-strength bleach will actually cause the virus to encapsulate, and it'll protect itself from being killed. So you need to use that 10 parts water to 1 part bleach, but then just wipe it off with a paper towel. But those are options that people have, since the hand sanitizers and alcohol wipes and things like that are pretty much all sold out at the stores.
Excellent. These are fantastic and great tips. I want to thank you so much, Brian. I've got Kathy on the line who's got some ideas herself. Kathy, welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. How's it going?
Hi, good. For making hand sanitizer, the semi-liquid gel type variety, one can use aloe vera gel, which is available at some of our more health food store-oriented places still. I know there's a store, and I think the road is 514 in Los Lunas. I won't use names, I guess, of the store, although I have that. where they have large half gallons of aloe vera gel. That is a health food store. And you combine that then with your alcohol. And we just buy 90% alcohol. We were able to find it a couple of weeks ago in dollar stores. So hopefully, and I do see it once in a while on the shelves, a bottle or two left, because people don't quite know what to do with a tall bottle of 90% alcohol, and they're leaving some of that behind. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And you combine, and I'm sorry, but I don't know the recipe for the two combining together. But I'm sure something is better than nothing at this point.
That's right. That is absolutely right. Thank you for calling in with your suggestions and tips. And Doug and anyone else out there, if you want to get some more information from the state's non-health COVID hotline, that's 1-833-551-0518. On the line now, we have Larry Gallegos, Communication Service Specialist for the Metropolitan Detention Center. Good morning, Larry. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So, how are you doing? How are you and your family doing?
We're doing fine. Everybody's sheltering in place except for me, because I'm working with the government, so I'm at our Emergency Operations Center for the county right now.
In there, you're doing the good work. Now tell me, Bernalillo County announced that certain medically vulnerable inmates would be released from the MDC. Tell me about how that decision came about.
Well, there's been a lot of I should say suggestion or pressure from a lot of the attorney groups and stuff, saying that we need to get the inmates in a situation where there's fewer of them, because it's so hard for them to socially distance at the jail. So, again, that's been asked across the country of detention facilities and jails. So we decided to go ahead and do our part.
That's good. I'm glad that you are. Now, what factors determine which incarcerated people are eligible for release?
Well, we're starting first. The first list was made based on CDC guidelines, based on health issues that they might already have, and age. So that's the first list we made, was people who were older and who might have health issues that could be exacerbated by the COVID-19.
So what do you say to members of the public who might be concerned that this action will endanger people in our state?
Well, again, the people who are being let go are all low-level. They might be misdemeanor charges, maybe somebody who has a probation violation on a nonviolent situation.
So these are nonviolent offenders?
Yeah.
Okay.
The ones who the first list they made, half of them were not eligible because of the violent nature of their charges.
Okay.
So we just started working with with the district attorney's office and the public defender's office to see who could be let go. So that this was a decision made. The list would go through both those offices, and then they would decide, and then it would go before a judge, and a judge would either release or not. And we have had a lot of releases because simply they were not, like I said, they weren't high-level violent crimes.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, they were somebody who had less than 30 days left on their time to serve.
Okay.
So they would be out in 30 days anyway. So to help bring the population down, they got an early release.
Now, some people are calling for more prisoners to be released, saying that inmates aren't sufficiently protected from the spread of COVID. Are people able to stay safely 6 feet away from each other while at the MDC? And do you have enough protective equipment for the employees?
Well, again, like everybody, protective equipment is tough to find right now. We have enough at the current time. Depending how much longer this goes on, could be more of an issue. But all across the country, everybody's trying to get the personal protective equipment, and we'll do our best to keep our folks safe out there, the staff, and also the inmates. And I think the real thing to remember is that there is some social distancing that we're doing by letting only a few inmates out an hour.
Mm-hmm.
They let them get their showers and like that, and then go back to their rooms.
Okay.
So we're limiting it by just limiting the number of places and times that they can meet.
Okay. Now, We're going to take a break. You're listening to Larry Gallegos from the MDC. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. This morning, we're talking about responses to coronavirus in New Mexico. What radical changes has your organization or field had to make to adapt or adapt? How are you coping with all the fear and uncertainty? Our phone lines are open. Give us a call. Give us a call. Give us a call. 277-5866 or tweet the hashtag Let's Talk NM. We're on 89.9 KUNM.
Hey, I'm Nash Jones, host of Morning Edition here on KUNM. I'm not going to take too much time, but, you know, it's important. What I want to say is important. We recognize that here at KUNM, we're in a pretty unique position to safely bring our community together and lift up voices here on the air when we all need to be at a distance right now. So here during the break, when I'd normally play messages from our supporters, I want to encourage you to become one of them. This week is our quiet drive, and right now we have hit 77% of our goal, up 2% just today, which is incredible. But we need you to make that final push. If you're appreciating what KUNM is doing with the call-in show this week and across all our programming, bringing you more NPR headlines throughout the week, throughout the day rather, local updates on Morning Edition and All Things Considered and online, let us know with your donation at KUNM.org. I'm going to encourage you to give this hour, the 8 o'clock hour during Let's Talk New Mexico, because we have a challenge grant on the line. If we reach 10 donations this hour, an anonymous donor from Albuquerque will donate an additional $500 to KUNM, just 10 donations. That's doable with your help. Join Ellen Hildebrandt of Albuquerque in throwing your support behind your public radio station, 89.9 KUNM. Thanks, Ellen, and thanks to everyone who stepped up to support our work here at KUNM. Now, back to the show.
Thank you, Nash. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Khalil A. Colonna. We're talking coronavirus and the changes that are sweeping across our society and how we are responding to it. When you think about a post-COVID-19 world, what does that look like? Are you just taking it one day at a time? We want to hear your fears and hopes. We want to hear what's on your mind. Join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. I was talking with Larry Gallegos from the MDC, and I have to ask you this question again, Larry. How are you all ensuring that inmates and people at MDC are staying 6 feet away from each other?
Well, again, in some cases, it's almost impossible, to be totally honest with you. But we're doing as much as we can. But again, instead of normally the entire, say, pod would be let out into the common area during the day, instead we're only allowing a few at a time so they can have the social distancing while they're out of their cells. Gives them a chance to get for showers, to get a bite to eat, maybe to make phone calls or contact their attorneys or like that. So that's the best we can do as far as the screening. Now, in some areas, obviously, in the places where there's just one person per cell, which is a couple of our pods, it's very easy to keep them socially distanced. In other areas, for them, there are sometimes two to a cell, it's impossible in that case. And again, that's usually the lower level offenders. The violent offenders are the ones that usually are one to a cell. So the lower level ones, that's why we're trying to let as many of them out as we can to get that situation so that there's fewer with two in a cell.
Okay. I understand that. I understand that. And thank you for answering that question. I want to move on to a listener call. We've got Dr. Kazuva. He is on the line. Thank you, Dr. Kazuva. Thank you for calling the show.
Hi. It's Dr. Kazava. I'm a pediatrician in the Indian Health Service, and I happen to be home at the moment. I heard the suggestion of using dried out baby wipes and putting alcohol or bleach on them to wipe surfaces. If you're going to do that, please be sure to relabel the package so that nobody ends up using it on an actual baby.
Important.
So, it's a good idea to repurpose those. Let them repurpose dried out baby wipes, but please do something about relabeling the container or the package so that nobody by mistake uses them on a real baby.
Okay.
And I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Sarah, I think somewhere you've got a joke about bleaching babies coming in the future. Somewhere in there. I know, I want to write your material for you, but I think there's something there.
I'm taking notes the whole hour. It's important.
Okay. It is very, very important. And Larry, let me switch back to you really quick. Have there been any cases of COVID in the MDC?
None at all, either staff or inmates. Last week, we had somebody who was actually taken to the hospital for a different medical situation, and the hospital tested him. And so when we found out the hospital tested him, we brought him back and put him in isolation, and the results came back, and they were negative. And that's the only one we've had.
Okay. Okay. Let's hope it stays that way. Now, we've had a caller. My producer says we've had a caller to say that the Broken Trail Distillery and Brewery is making hand sanitizer. And he has confirmed this. So if anyone is in need, Doug particularly, hit them up. Find them online and call them to see how you can get some. Now I'd like to welcome in Baron Jones, a criminal justice advocate for the American Civil Liberties Union. Good morning, Baron. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Are you doing well amongst all this? Are your family, is everyone okay?
Yes, I'm fortunate. I'm doing great. Well, I'm doing pretty well, and yeah, I'm super lucky to be, you know, employed and not having the stresses that many people are living with right now. So I see myself as being super fortunate. I have my health, and I'm relatively happy during all this chaos.
I agree to that. Now, let me ask you: you've been working for the release of incarcerated people. What's your reaction to the news from the MDC yesterday?
Oh, we definitely commend MDC for their approach to release folks who are who doesn't need to be in jail or incarcerated, and folks who are high risk of contracting this virus. So we definitely commend their decision.
Okay. Now, what are you hearing from prisoners and their families about the conditions inside the Department of Corrections position? Prisons in New Mexico. And also, I want to hear about what you're hearing from the privately run prisons as well.
We're hearing the same thing. You know, I know in prisons and jails, getting access to things like soap and water is not all that easy. You know, sometimes they rely on folks to purchase from the commissary. So that's sort of troubling. But other than that, we haven't, heard much. We know that some jails and prisons across the states are actually, taking measures as much as, taking measures. I don't think they're enough, but they're taking measures to keep people safe.
What measures do you think that could be taken that aren't?
We can, as I mentioned earlier, we can make sure that people have access to hygiene supplies and not have to rely on the commissary. We can maybe go a little bit further about releasing folks who just do not need to be in jail. You know, a third of our prison population on any given day are composed of individuals of technical parole violations, missing an appointment or having a dirty UA. So we can do things like that to sort of get folks out. As Mr. Gallegos mentioned, social distancing in a correctional setting is impossible. And so we need to, sort of think outside the box and get people out of jail as much as we can.
Well, here's an outside of the box thought. I've lived in Albuquerque for 10 years. I've been to many markets, haberdasheries, and farmers markets. And I see a lot of people who make their own soap. Is it possible for people as a resource, people, citizens out here, residents of Albuquerque and New Mexico, to make soap and donate that to these correctional facilities? Mr. Gallegos, is that something that that would be acceptable?
Well, as far as MDC, we have plenty of soap. And again, the biggest deal for the CDC has said, warm soap and water is actually the best, better than the hand sanitizers and all that. And our prisoners all have access to hot water and soap in the pods.
Okay. All right. Now, Baron, let me ask you. The ACLU is also pushing for jails and prisons to implement comprehensive plans to mitigate risks during the coronavirus outbreak. What would those plans look like?
Those plans, as Mr. Gallegos mentioned, on the MDC side, there would be somewhat akin to what some of the correctional institutions institutions have already implemented, like placing posting their sort of plan on their website just so folks can see what they have to do. But that plan will include, you know, collecting data, you know, sort of detailing what they're doing to ensure that the people who are working in those facilities are being screened properly. You know, my nephew is in prison in Michigan, and I got off the phone with him, and he, you know, sort of explained how all the guards and the units are, you know, have masks on, and they're getting, you know, tested, and it's slowing down the process, but he feels comfortable and confident that that they're being taken care of. So something like that, something to show, to sort of explain what they're doing, and also to make that data available so our community public health professionals can use it and analyze it and things like that.
Now,
so, yeah, so be a bit more comprehensive about how they're informing the public about what they're doing to protect our people inside prisons and jails.
Are you getting a good response from facilities? Are they giving you all that data? Are they making that available?
No. We got a horrible response. We sent out letters, I think, somewhere around March 10th, asking folks to sort of share with us that we sent to all 30 county jails, the Department of Corrections, and a couple other stakeholders, including MDC, asking them to, you know, share their plan, what they were going to do to ensure the safety of folks. And we got one response today, and that was from San Juan County.
Okay. Well, Mr. Gallegos, you're on the line. Is this something that the MDC is willing to do, to give that data to the public, to the ACLU, so we can all, I mean, we're all fighting this coronavirus outbreak together, either you be incarcerated or if you're walking around freely? Is this information something that you will make available to the ACLU and other organizations?
We will make it available eventually. The reality is right now, okay, even the list that we've come up with, the people that can get out, is changing daily because we're having court every day. So people are going before the judges every single day. So we might send you a list. Well, here's everybody on the list today, and by 5 o'clock that afternoon, another 10, 15 people are off that list. So the list is pretty liquid, so it's kind of hard to put the data together because it's so liquid. But I feel like we're doing the best we can to get as many inmates out as we can. We're, as far as for the spread of the virus, we have wash stations at the employee entry, because right now there is no public entry into the jail. And everybody's required to wash their hands with soap and water when they get there. Because the reality is with the jail, the chance of the virus going up there is more likely to be brought in by a staff member who's coming in because they're out in the community. Inside the jail, if it's not in there, there's no way that it's going to spread.
Okay.
We're doing complete, and even the staff is getting their temperatures every morning when they come in, every day as they come in, taking temperatures, making sure that, you know, they're asking the questions, you know, how are you feeling? Have you had a fever? You know, all the questions that they're asking the public. And again, we know that in the public realm, most people are not being tested. They go over there and they ask the questions and say, okay, you're not showing the symptoms, we're not going to test you yet. So that's what's going on pretty much across the country. So we're doing the same thing with our guards and when they're going in. Now, as far as, again, we're also changing something else in that we'll be going to video teleconference starting Monday. So the we won't be bringing any more inmates downtown for court. We'll do it all by video.
Okay. Okay.
Doing everything we can to stop it before it hits there.
I understand.
And again, you know, it's like everybody else. We just don't know how it's going to hit. We have four isolation rooms that they can be put into. We have two pods that we've completely emptied out, one for males, one for females. If we need to quarantine, we'll quarantine in that area.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the plan we have at this point.
Okay, I understand. Now, Baron, you're an advocate, and you talk about overcrowding in jails and prisons. What other cracks does this crisis reveal about our criminal justice system?
Oh, a whole bunch. For one, it sort of highlights, the need to ensure that folks, when they exit incarceration, have access to safe and healthy housing and within the community. It sort of speaks about, you know, just in general, over-incarceration. You know, we as a nation, we tend to use incarceration as a way to deal with our public health crisis. And what we need to be doing is use this as a time to sort of emphasize the need to come up with suitable evidence-based alternatives, such as treatment for substance use disorder and mental health issues. We know that we don't have enough of that in this state, and that's why our prisons and jails are so full today. So I think, you know, we can use this as this crisis as a lesson to sort of reevaluate the way we handle public safety in our state.
I think it's a cause for us to reevaluate how we do a lot of things, not only in the state and the country, but across the globe. It's an opportunity, I believe, for us to kind of reassess and to see what has worked, what isn't working, and how we have to evolve. What are some other suggestions as far as when it comes to criminal justice and criminal reform that we can work through?
We can look at public safety as a way in criminal justice and criminal legal system reform as the public safety as a way to, bring communities together. Our current system sort of tears communities apart, as we're seeing in today's world. So that's one of the things we can do. We can also look at our sentencing efforts to sort of free up resources to tackle the underlying causes of crime and public safety, the issues that we face. At the ACLU, we recognize that there are public safety concerns. Those are realities. But if we don't handle them in a smart manner, we're just going to create just a cycle and the men and women or the people housed in our correctional settings is just going to be a revolving door. So I think we need to step back from what we're doing and really take a new fresh eye approach.
I accept that's something I agree with you with. A fresh eye approach is definitely needed. That's Baron Jones from the ACLU. Also on the line is Mr. Larry Gallegos from the MDC. But Sarah Kennedy, comedian Sarah Kennedy, is on the line as well. Sarah, some final thoughts. How do you think that people can use creativity and humor to give us perspective on obviously what we've been talking about most recently, some very, very heavy issues?
Well, I think actually your theme for this whole thing has been pretty perfect, because when you talk about this being the new normal, this is the new normal. And I keep joking that I feel like it's been March for a decade. And, it's going to feel like March for a little bit longer, but I think we're all in the same boat as far as all looking forward to when this is over. And we can all visualize the future and what we want from it. And I think that's where we can be the most creative. And I think that's where we can be the most innovative. And I think that's where we can appreciate the return to getting to spend time together and that we're looking forward to, and just keeping that in our minds and moving forward and making choices based on that is going to get us through it.
That is perfectly put. That is the most excellent way that we can put a cap to this week of special Let's Talk New Mexico's to address how New Mexico is responding to the coronavirus pandemic. We're out of time for today. I want to say thank you to our guests, Baron Jones, Larry Gallegos, Lara Segura, Sarah Kennedy, and Matthew Whelan. Thanks to everyone who called in, sent questions and comments, and had resources. This is what we need to do. We need to help each other out. If you missed part of today's show, you can listen on KUNM.org or subscribe to Let's Talk New Mexico podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our coronavirus coverage also includes our daily podcast. It's called Your New Mexico Government. It's hosted by me, produced by Marisa DeMarco. All the stories we cover are specifically about COVID-19 and how it affects the entirety of our lives. Search Your NM Government on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. You can hear conversations with experts, public officials, organizers, all about COVID-19 in New Mexico. And if you like being able to hear these conversations here on KUNM, consider taking a moment to donate today. Click that donate button on our website. It's at KUNM.org. Our engineer for today is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez screens your calls. Bryce Dix live tweeted the program from self-quarantine. Good job in taking care of yourself and everyone, Bryce. I got snacks for you when you come back. And Ty Bannerman produced today's show from his couch. Lucky, lucky, lucky man. Hannah Colton is our amazing executive producer. I am Khalil A. Colonna. Thank you all for listening this entire week as we try and aim to find solutions and work through this together. This is KUNM.